They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Rural Lions UK podcast, episode 244. This game won't be bland. My name's Matthew Turner alongside Ashley Soden. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, doing great. It's nice to, as we said, we can not worry about the division now. Now it's time just to try and lock up that good seeding in the playoffs, and what a test we've got potentially on our hands on Saturday night for Americans, but for us poor sods who are going to be watching it at 1:30 in the morning over here. Sunday morning, what a game to sort of test ourselves against a truly powerhouse team in the conference before we get into the playoffs.
Yeah. Sorry, I've switched off just for a moment there. I don't know what's happened. I've had a long, long Christmas of spending time with family and I'm recovering. So this is going to be an interesting show for me. Right, people, this is Lions at Cowboys preview show. As we always do, a little bit of preamble just to start up. So Discord link is in the live chat now. Please come and join us there. Lovely place to come and chat Lions with some really good people. College football podcast has not happened yet this week, but it will happen. They'll be recapping the bowl games today and looking ahead to the college football playoff, which is coming up this weekend. This weekend?
Monday.
Yeah, it's not far away. So look out for that. Don't forget to like the show, sub to the podcast, rate, review, all that good stuff. You know how much it helps us out. And we've got the merch store open as well. If you have some significant others that you want to give a treat and you want to support the show too, links in the chat as well. Do go and check it out. Some really good stuff there. Right, Lions news. News actually from the last hour or so, the Lions have waived cornerback Chase Lucas and linebacker Trevor Nowaski. They have activated from IR the fullback Jason Kabinda, friend of the show, and outside linebacker James Houston's 21-day evaluation clock has started. There is still one spot available on the main roster as a result of their moves. Ash, what do you make of it all?
So we were discussing it a bit before we went live. Activation of Kabinda, you could kind of tell it was coming when they activated his own evaluation clock a couple of weeks ago. They value him for what he brings on special teams and the blocking and stuff. And I guess the culture fix has been here since the start of this, the rebuild. But did we really need him when Laporta's been taking snaps in the backfield? Wright can do it when he's healthy, which we'll get into in a bit when we look at the injury report. James Mitchell can play as a H-back. Hell, we've had Rodrigo take snaps there. So is it sacrificing a bit of team performance in inverted commas by getting rid of someone to have that culture thing? Or will it pay out? We'll have to see over the next couple of weeks. And then with Lucas and Nowaski, they were both special teamers, especially Lucas, who wasn't getting many snaps on defense as it was. And at least according to Jeff Risden, he tweeted out about it. He has been going down in fit estimation the past couple of weeks in terms of special teams play, in terms of like blocking on the return team. So that makes sense. In the West game, we only really signed him from the practice squad because the Steelers are sniffing around. So either the Steelers sign him up to their 53 or we managed to get him back in the practice squad. It's not really a big loss for me, as much as we love our UDFA linebackers. The extra spot, I won't be surprised if it's Badgley. It's just them getting that spot ready just to sign him up from the practice squad a bit closer to the game or something. That's the only reason I can see us having this open spot. And then Houston, going to be good. He might, I hope, he just give that little spark we might need for the playoffs where we saw what happened with him last year, sort of coming onto the scene against the Bills. He seemingly steps up kind of in these big games when the pressure's on. So while, yes, of course, because of the surgery he's had, he's going to be limited to playing off the right-hand side of the line because of the way that he plays the game. He needs his ankle to work that way. It'll just be that little spark where that we've sort of seen with Irvin, that Julian's had in games against the Bears, like he always seems to. just that on a more consistent basis, inverted commas, because Houston, when he's on, he's just unstoppable. Him and Hutch as a pair, we saw what happened at the end of the say, the end of last year, where they were both helping each other. Houston would get the pressure and Hutch would finish it off and vice versa. That's something we kind of need now as we get into the precious games, where we're playing against Dallas, where we might be going up against them again, or the Vikings or the Rams, where we just might need that extra little spark or something just to give us that little push and win percentage to win these tight games. Because as we know, when we get to the playoffs, you can easily be one and done. You need to win every game, because you lose, you're out, you're done until September. So he might just be that little thing we need right now.
I've got to say, I'm slightly surprised that they've activated James Houston's clock midweek and not done it a bit earlier in a week. So, like, if you get to Thursday, why not wait till the following Tuesday, and it gives you an extra game just to give someone to recover, because he's clearly not 100% and he probably won't be at all this season, but another game might be enough. Now, as it stands, his 21-day clock is going to expire just before the wildcard weekend, so we'll have to make a decision on that.
I think it's divisional, because I know Dr. Liao, who works with DLP, put the timeline up, and I think it's the wild card game is the 17th, and his clock runs out the 22nd. So it'd just be before the...
It's 3 weeks, and it's just before this game. So Dallas game...
Give me a second. I've got the Rizwood have retreated it.
I'm sure, but it doesn't make sense to me, because he can't miss the next three games.
Here we go. So
Dallas,
20,
week 18, 20, wild card weekend.
So a 21-day practice window activated on December the 28th. Practice window will end on the 18th of January. The first round of the playoffs to the wild cards is the 13th of January. The second round to the divisional will be on the 20th of January.
Oh, I just can't count. All right. Okay, fine.
If only you didn't work, and if only you works in the profession that needs you to be kind of good at maths.
That's okay. That's what Excel's for, mate. Don't worry about it. But with Houston, he's going to bring something that the team doesn't currently have, but he's not a big, important piece, generally speaking. He's just a great change-up piece. But people have got to bear in mind that he was a third-string guy during preseason and not expect too much from him. And if we don't expect too much from him, we'll be fine. Unfortunately, the Lions fans are clamoring for someone of his skill set and they want him to hit the ground running. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's going to go well for him. I really hope he gets one sack in the playoffs. But that's what I'm hoping for right now. And I do think they'll use like all of his evaluation window, because they need to bring him up to speed. Like, he's had a broken ankle, was it?
It was a broken fibula with an associated ankle sprain or something like that. So, he needs to have time
on the practice field. He's no way going to be activated for week 18. I just can't see it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, shame for Chase, same for Trevor, two people that I really like. Hopefully they make it back to our practice squad. Let's see. Don't think Jason should have been activated, but we'll come on to potentially why in just a second. Let's move on to the Cowboys preview itself. The Cowboys are 10-5. The expected win total per Pro Football Reference is 11.2 wins. So they are almost a game under expectation. This season for them started off with wins against the Giants and Jets, a loss to the Cardinals. Big surprise there. A win against the Patriots, a loss to the San Francisco 49ers, wins against the Chargers and Rams, a loss to the Eagles, and then a 5-game win streak against the Giants, Panthers, Commanders, Seahawks, and Eagles before losing 2 straight recently at Bills and at Miami. So if you have a look at all of the games they've lost, bar the Cardinals even, it's been against the 49ers, the Eagles, the Bills, and the Dolphins. 4 quality teams, especially with the way the Bills are playing at the moment. They deserve to be put in that category. However, you look at their wins, Giants, Jets, Patriots, Chargers, Rams when they were playing poorly, Giants, Panthers, Commanders, Seahawks, Eagles as a start of their really bad run. So it might sound very familiar to Lions fans, but they beat up on bad teams and lose to good teams.
Yeah.
What do we think the lines are? I'll leave that to you guys to decide. The betting for this game, Lions are 41 to 20. That makes it about plus 210. Cowboys are 5 to 2 on, so that is minus 240. Cowboys are 5.5 point favourites on the spread currently. Over under is 53 points, which I think is the highest the Lions have seen all year on the over under. Injury report is out, and three Lions are not going in this game. The first is Brock Wright. He has not practiced all week following the injury he suffered in week 15. He was out for week 16. James Houston, who had his clock activated today, he's not playing in this game, obviously. CJ Gardner-Johnson had an outside shot to be activated this week, but he has not been activated. I suspect he will be a go for week 18, but we shall see. Cameron Sutton is questionable. He did not practice today because of a toe injury, today being Thursday, if you're on the audio pod. Everyone else does not have a designation who is on the injury report. So that was Derek Barnes, full practice all week. Jason Kabinda was obviously activated. He was full practice today. Taylor Decker is absolutely fine. He was just vet rest yesterday, despite the did not practice. Jerry Jacobs has been there all week with a hamstring problem after he was had an issue following his benching last week. Ragnow just had a rest day today. He is not designated. And Penei Sewell has had a shoulder issue, but he has practiced all week as well. The report is not yet out for Dallas.
It is, but it isn't. They've done it in a weird way, because as we can hear me clicking, because I'm trying to get the actual stuff, they report it in a really weird way. So let me just get it up properly so I can actually read it. It's very weird. So Jonathan Hankins, TV defensive lineman Jonathan Hankins and running back Rick O'Dowell have both been ruled out with ankle injuries.
So say that again for me. So just start from the top.
Interior defensive lineman Jonathan Hankins and running back Rick O'Dowell have both been ruled out for the game with ankle injuries. Starting left tackle Tyron Smith was upgraded to limited today and will be listed as questionable. And that's the only ones they've got listed in terms of that. And then I've obviously put ours on. So it's just there. So it's Hankins, Dow out, Tyron Smith, questionable. Everyone else has no injury designation going into the game.
Yeah, so the other people who had some sort of designation for Dallas, Fehoko Jr. was full practice all week. Malik Hooker was limited on Tuesday, full practice Wednesday. Hunter Lupke, the fullback who had a key fumble on the handoff last week, he was full practice Wednesday but limited on Tuesday. Zach Martin, limited on Tuesday, did not practice Wednesday. Tyrone Smith, who was upgraded, as you just heard, to limited, he didn't practice on Tuesday or Wednesday. Matt Weletzko, the tackle, he was full practice all week. And Chuma Adoga, limited in practice on Wednesday. No idea about Thursday, but you know about the people who are out. Hopefully, Tyron Smith doesn't go, but if he's questionable, he's probably fine. I know that him being out for some of last week's game was a big hit on them. We'll talk about that in just a minute. On injured reserve for them, big misses in Trayvon Diggs at corner and the linebacker Leighton Van Der Esch. They're also missing the rookie and I know Lions draft favourite, Demarvion Overshown. Let's have a look at their starting depth chart. In fact, no, let's talk injuries first. Let's talk injuries. Yeah. So for the Lions, we talked about the reason why perhaps Jason Kabinda has been activated. And the main reason for it, I guess, is Brock Wright isn't a go, who they've kind of been using in that role. Sam Laporte has been playing it, but ideally tight end one doesn't play that role. And maybe they just don't want James Mitchell playing that role as very much either. So you've got to have someone there. And maybe he's a better option than Rodrigo. I don't know. He's been playing a bit more at linebacker and has been really good.
Yeah, it's the toss-up. As we know, Bright, we do like to play our two tight end sets. We like to play him at fullback, as we said. So he will be, I don't want to say a big miss, because we seemingly got away with it last week, not really playing him. So maybe we can get away with it. But the big one that I'm looking at is Sutton. I know he's only questionable, but with how the Cowboys are on offense, as we'll get into on a bit, you want all your corners to be fit, because we need to. They've got a pretty damn good wide receiver core, and as much as what's his name, Kendall Vildor and Khalil Dorsey have been okay, Vildor more than Dorsey perhaps, if we have Sutton out, it's looking very bleak because this Cowboys team can pass on you with CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks, and so on. So we need Sutton to be. I know it's questionable with a toe. We kind of need him to be active because otherwise it might be a long day on Saturday, and that's not really what we want.
No, it is not. Let's come on to the Dallas depth chart. Quarterback one is, of course, Dak Prescott. QB two is Cooper Rush. Don't forget, of course, that quarterback three is Trey Lance, who came over in a trade from the San Francisco 49ers. Running backs, Tony Pollard is RB1. And because Rico Dowdle doesn't go, Deuce Vaughn is running back two. Right receivers, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks, Michael Gallup, backed up by Jalen Tolbert, Kevontae Turpin, and Jalen Brooks. Tight end one is the revelation of this year at tight end, outside of a certain someone in our own ranks, Jake Ferguson. Luke Schoonmaker, who Michigan fans, of course, will know well as number two. Peyton Hendershot, number three. The fullback punter, Luke Key, he has been used extensively recently, so get ready to see a bit of him as he is past fit, probably. The front five, Tyron Smith at left tackle, Tyler Smith at left guard, Tyler Badiash at centre, right guard Zach Martin, right tackle Terrence Steele, backed up by Chuma Adoga, Brock Hoffman, TJ Bass, Matt Waletzko, and Asim Richards. On defence, base 4-3, the interior defensive lineman would have been Jonathan Hankins, but he doesn't go, which means we probably will see a start by Mazzie Smith, the first rounder from Michigan this year, and Osa Odigzuo, who's had a terrific year. Starting defensive ends are DeMarcus Lawrence and Dorrance Armstrong. Backing those front four up are Sam Williams, Neville Gallimore, Dante Fowler, Tyrus Wheat, and Chauncey Golston. They do list in their depth chart Micah Parsons as a outside linebacker. We, of course, know that he plays almost exclusively on the edge. And then their other two linebackers are Damone Clark and Marquise Bell. And if those names ring any bells to you and you don't watch a lot of Dallas football, that will be because Damone Clark was Ash's favourite linebacker from 2 years ago, and Marquise Bell was Ant's favourite safety from last
Florida
year.
Same year. So Florida A, out of Florida A&M.
There we go. The back four, the DBs, are Stephon Gilmore, Jaron Curse, Malik Hooker, and Deron Bland, backed up by Jordan Lewis, Israel Mukamu, Donovan Wilson, Nashon Wright, Eric Scott Jr., Wanye Thomas, and Noah Igbinoghene. I can't ever say that name. Noah Igbinoghene. That's the one. Kicker is Brandon Aubrey, the only perfect kicker in the NFL so far this year. Brian Anger, who is potentially the best punter so far this year, and he's also the holder too. Punt returner, kick returner is Kevontae Turpin, one of the best in the league. Long snapper is Trent Sieg. This is one of the best special teams units you will see in the NFL. Ash, when you have a look at that overall team, what comes to mind?
Please, can we stop the pass this week? Because, Dan, that's their starting three at wide receiver. I know Gallup is coming off the ACL from last year, but that starting three at wide receiver is up there for the league. That's up there with the Bengals for me, with obviously Jamar Chase, Higgins, and Tyler Boyd. That is a damn good starting three, a trio of receivers. And then even then, the backups, obviously, Quante Turpin, he's kind of like their Khalif, more of a return guy, but he's speedy. He came out of the USFL a couple of years ago. They signed him up as the NFL Special Teams Player of the Year, and he's hit the ground running with them. Jalen Tolbert, you might remember from a couple of years ago, Ants loved him coming out of South Alabama. And then Jalen Brooks this year, they drafted in the seventh. Damn good wide receiver core. Offensive line used to be a lot better. They obviously were kind of like the Philadelphia Eagles, seen as one of the best O-lines in the league. They still are, but there's some weaknesses there. As we'll come on to into a bit, looking at the right tackle, cough, cough. Tight ends, two of my guys. So Jake Ferguson, I could not shut up about 2 years ago. I really loved him. Felt a bit painful that he went to Dallas, but I'm happy to see him sort of hit the ground running, taking up that spot after their Dalton Schultz went, for obviously, their former tight end. went to Houston. Dallas seems to just have this conveyor belt of good starting tight end ones for the past like 15 years or so. And then Schoonmaker at Michigan, everyone knows him. I liked, but he's kind of a less athletic version of Brock Wright. He's good at everything. Can receive, can block, but isn't really anything special. And then Peyton Hender shot out of SMU a couple of years ago. I didn't really like. I thought he was just a receiving guy, couldn't really block. Kind of proven by the fact his tight end three really hasn't broken out for them, despite being a really good receiver for SMU. Running back room, Pollard hasn't stepped up in the absence of Zeke. Everyone thought, oh yeah, he's going to be great because everyone's calling for him to get the starts over Zeke when Zeke was there because he's more efficient. Perhaps falling into the same trap Alexander Mattison has for the Vikings, where he was more effective with quality of rushes rather than quantity. It's just too much for him and he can't handle it, which is one of the reasons why we have Monty and Gibbs, because you can spell them both then and then they don't get tired out. Down, he's ruled out. He's okay. Juice Vaughn, the little speedy guy out of Kansas State, who obviously had that lovely draft story of his dad being the one calling him to draft him for the team because he's their head of college scouting. Hunter Luke Gabe, we might remember from North Dakota State. So FCS, one of the best guys there. As you said, hasn't really hit the ground running in the league, though. Had a key fumble last week. And then we look at the quarterback room, Dak Prescott, MVP candidate this year. Cooper Rush, everyone wanted him in the offseason as our backup QB. And then Trey Lance, what a story he's had in the NFL is the kind way of putting it, I guess. Had all the hype in the world, hasn't really lived up to it. Overall offense, despite being led by Mike McCarthy, who everyone thought was a dinosaur, they're pretty damn good. And then you look at this defense led by Dan Quinn, the other head coach who kind of flamed out. You might remember him from being the head coach for when the Falcons famously had their 28-3 moments against the Patriots. He's really coached these guys up. Obviously, we've said they've only got three linebackers, or two and a half, because Parsons obviously plays on the edge, but there's a reason for that. They're pretty damn good up front in terms of pass rushing, not so much against stopping the pass, but that back, their secondary is just loaded to stop the pass. That's what they're there for. They like to stop the pass. They give up the yards on the ground because they know, because of this offense, teams will get behind to them so they can just stop the pass, control the game, and they win out. And it shows in their home form. If you listen to Eric Schlitz, probably the Detroit Lions breakdown, this team, when it's at home, averages 39.9 points a game and only give up 13 points something. When you play them at home, like we are this week, they absolutely put beatings down. That's why the over-under is so damn high, because the Cowboys have shown this year, when you play them at Jerry World, there's going to be fireworks, and I can see there being fireworks on Saturday night, because we're going to go toe-to-toe to them. It's just whether the team turns up to do that or if this turns into a Baltimore situation.
It's going to be a really interesting game. Let's go into this in a bit more depth. The overall stats per PFF and DVOA. This team is fourth overall per PFF, sixth per DVOA on offense, sixth per PFF, ninth per DVOA, and defense, they're fifth per PFF and sixth in DVOA. So remarkably consistent there as a top five team in the NFL, despite having a losing run. And this is what happens when you beat up on bad teams and lose to the really good teams narrowly. Like, you get ranked very highly because it's all quality, really, one way or the other. Quarterback Dak Prescott was the favorite for MVP before the bad run of 2 games ago, where he played awfully against Buffalo, but then had a bit of a bounce back game against Miami, despite not getting the win. He has 353 completions for 516 attempts, that's 68.4%, 3,892 yards already, 30 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 104.2 passer rating, 71.7 QBR. He's also got 43 rushes with 237 yards. That's 4.5 yards a carry on the ground with 2 rushing touchdowns and a PFF grade of 90.2. Lead running back, Tony Pollard, 219 carries for 886 yards. That's 4 yards a carry and 5 touchdowns. But he's actually more effective perhaps through the air than he is on the ground. 52 catches on 62 throws his way. 295 yards, that's 5.7 yards per catch, and a PFF grade of 74.4. CeeDee Lamb has been absolutely tremendous this year. 12 carries for 101 yards. That's 8.4 yards per carry on the ground, and two rushing touchdowns, which you may not expect for someone of his size and stature, but he does carry it out of the backfield quite often. 109 receptions already on the year, and 151 throws his way. 1,424 yards. That's 13.1 yards per catch and nine touchdowns, and a team-leading 90.5 PFF grade. The second target in the passing game is the tight end Jake Ferguson, as Ash mentioned earlier. 61 catches on 90 throws, 659 yards, 10.8 yards per catch, and five touchdowns, PFF grade of 71.7. Other good grades in there: the tackle Tyron Smith, 83.9. The guard Tyler Smith, both on the left-hand side, 73.3. And the guard Zach Martin, former All-Pro, 70.6 at right guard. Bad grades, Terrence Steele, 50.9, but no one else. This team on third down is fourth in the NFL, converting 47.6% of the time. On fourth down, they're 12th with 54.5%, but they've only tried 22 times. In the red zone, they're middle of the pack. 34 touchdowns on 62 trips, 54.8%, 16th, as I say. So, Ash, looking at this offense, you've kind of talked about it a little bit already, but they've got weapons in that passing game, and Lamb and Ferguson. Prescott is having a fantastic year with a bad game here or there, but overall it's been a terrific season for him. And an offensive line which had been doing really well, but actually coming into this game has been struggling a little bit against some dynamic defenses.
Yeah, exactly. So looking at that offensive line to start, because that's obviously where most of it, well, their offense kind of starts. Obviously, you've got Dak, but built up on that offensive line. If Smith's out, we can just target the tackles, because hopefully you would have seen like Eric's tweets, everyone's tweets. Terrence Steele has been one of the worst pass blocking tackles in the league this year. And who usually lines up over the right tackle? Aiden Hutchinson. So we might have to see Hutchinson being held like a teddy bear a couple of times this week, but Hutch will be able to work Steele and get pressures. It's just a matter of getting pressures from the other tackle side and then from the interior, because their interior is stacked. Like Tyler Beardash, who is the one we haven't listed in terms of grade. I remember him coming out a couple of years ago. They drafted him in the fourth round and he had some hype. He just wasn't really getting there the first couple of years, but this year he's really turned on and he's turned into that sort of solid center in the middle for them. So that interior is very stout in terms of pass blocking. So that might be something to monitor. Obviously, I know Pascal got injured last week, but look, he's not listed. We've got Kamish. Maybe, hopefully, we can get some pressure from the interior to help. But again, it's going to be focusing on those tackles. And yeah, just I don't want to say we can disregard the run, because obviously Pollard, you say 4 yards a carry, that's respectable, but he hasn't. It's not the main focus for him. It's stopping the pass, because you've got CD Lamb, we've got Ferguson, Brandon Cooks. Yeah, he might not be what he was a couple of years ago when he was playing with Jared Goff going to the Super Bowl, but he can still take top off defenses. And if you have a coverage bust against him, he makes you look really stupid. And then Michael Gallup, he's a good kind of like Josh Reynolds kind of receiver, where he's kind of unheralded, but he can do stuff. So that's going to be the focus for us, is stopping the pass, because if they can start getting ahead, then they can start bringing the run game into it, and it puts the pressure on us then to try and keep up. And they're one of the few offenses in this league that I think we might not be able to actually keep up with if it comes to a straight shootout. So we need to make sure it doesn't become a shootout, because we've won people over back over again the past couple of weeks winning the division. I can, and again, I know it's me sort of being a bit, okay, using the outside perception a bit too much, but if things get ugly on Saturday, if it's another shootout, I can see all the national pundits coming out again and saying, look, the Lions, they aren't as good as we all thought. They're going to be one and done in the playoffs. And I know the team doesn't really care about the outside noise, but players obviously on Instagram, like on Twitter and that, they'll be able to see it. And this is their kind of proving ground now for the playoffs, to sort of show, yes, we can do things and we can do stuff again in the playoffs, because I know next week we play the Vikings, but that might be a dead rubber. We might be locked into the 3 seed. The Vikings might be out of sort of the playoff race by then. We won't really learn anything about next week. It's basically just trot out for 60 minutes, play some football. This is the real proving ground for the playoffs. We need to show our credentials this week by keeping up with this Cowboys offense, because we might have to do that in the playoffs against the Cowboys, against the 49ers, against the Philadelphia Eagles. this is the chance to get that practice in for that for a couple of weeks' time.
Absolutely. This is the sort of game that teams that want to be serious about being a contender need to win. Big game, in conference, on the road, when everything's on the line. If the Lions lose this, they can't get the one seed. I don't think it's... No, if San Francisco lose out and the Lions win out and Philadelphia lose this week, I think it's still remotely possible.
It's remotely, but 49ers hold the conference tiebreakers and stuff. It's Philadelphia who, if they keep pace with us, we get it over them because we hold conference record over them, I believe. Common opponents over them.
Yes, because we'd have beaten Dallas if we win. So, yeah, basically the Lions must win this game to have Week 18 be relevant, to make a short statement of it. And we'll come up against teams as good in this and better in the playoffs if we want to be successful. And I mean, if we don't win this game, some of those are going to be on the road. So let's take care of business right now. And if you have a look at this offense, Dak is having a fantastic year. He's being efficient. His pocket presence is really good. I mean, it's come on massively. What he has struggled with in recent weeks is his O-line falling to pieces. And part of that was Tyron Smith going out midway through the Miami game. But Miami and Buffalo brought exotic pressures, put heavy stress on that offensive line. Dak, in the second half, I think it was, got hit on 8 out of his 10 dropbacks, or some sort of stat like that I heard on the Athletic Football Show. And it's like, wow, okay. So in order to win this game, the defensive line has really got to step up, and we'll come on to matchups in a little bit. But I think it's something the Lions can think that they can go after in this game. Now, the Lions have shown they can't hang with wide receiver ones this year, whether it is Keenan Allen or Justin Jefferson or anyone like that. So you know that CeeDee Lamb is going to have his. And I think at this point, we just got to accept that and try and limit the damage. It is going to be that sort of thing versus him. But even against Jake Ferguson, I mean, everyone else in there, I'm fine with. Brandon Cooks might get his too, especially in the red zone. There was a lovely touchdown against Miami where he ran a quick out from the slot on the left-hand side and ran to the sideline and toe-tapped. It was great. But he's not Brandon Cooks of 6-7 years ago, where he's going to go for 80, 85-yard bombs over the top, unless we're really stupid. So Lamb's the one to account for and the one to worry about. If you shut him down, Dallas is completely one-dimensional. Also, can you stop Prescott rushing? Because as soon as he sees it's man coverage and the Mike linebacker turns his back to try and cover someone crossing, he's going to be taking off up the middle as long as his O-line can create a gap for him. And of course, the Lions aren't exactly the best at containing rushing quarterbacks when it comes to that and keeping gap integrity when they're actually trying to get after him. So can the Lions play some heads-up football in that regard as well? It's going to be a fascinating matchup on that side of the ball. Let's move to the defense. The tackle leader for the team is the linebacker Damone Clark. 2 passes defended and a fumble recovery, 101 tackles, 4 tackles for a loss, 3 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 64.6. Sack leader is Micah Parsons. 2 passes defended, a forced fumble and a fumble recovery, 13 sacks, 53 tackles, 15 tackles for a loss, 30 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 92.7. He is having an all-pro year again. DeMarcus Lawrence is on the other side, though, and it would be remiss of me to not mention him. 3 passes defended, a forced fumble, 4 sacks, 42 tackles, 8 tackles for loss, 6 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 91.2. Deron Bland, who is a rookie, is he's a rookie. Why am I just questioning myself now? Because I was going to say it, and I'm like, I'm not sure.
He is not. He's a second-year player. He's a fifth-rounder last year.
Thank you. He's coming in relief of the star player on injured reserve in Trayvon Diggs, and he has been exemplary. 8 interceptions on the year leads the NFL. 5 of those were pick sixes. 5 of them. 14 passes defended, 62 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, a quarterback hit, and a PFF grade of 89.9. It is worth mentioning, though, with Deron Bland, that he had an absolutely atrocious game against Buffalo and Miami, and 2 games before the Buffalo game against Seattle as well. He played his best ball before the last 4 weeks. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him this week. Otherwise, Stephon Gilmore, we obviously know that he is the older brother of our own Stephen Gilmore. Two interceptions, 12 passes defended and a forced fumble, 60 tackles and a PFF grade of 73. He's not the defensive player of the year that he used to be with the Patriots, but he's still a damn good cornerback too. Other good grades on that defense, I mentioned Odigzuwa, the interior defensive lineman. 82.4 for him is very, very good. Marquise Bell, the other line, inside linebacker, 81.8. Terrific year for him. And Malik Hooker, the safety, who it seems like he's available in free agency every year and seems to get picked up and has a good year and then doesn't get paid. I feel bad for him, but a grade of 81.4 means he's having another terrific season. Bad grades in there. Mazi Smith, the rookie first rounder out of Michigan, not having the best time of it so far, but it's only a matter of time. 51.8 for him so far. Jonathan Hankins obviously doesn't go this week, but he was a 49.9 in the interior of the defensive lineman as a starter. Jordan Lewis, the backup cornerback, 42.5, and safety starter Jayron Kearse, 42.1. In terms of efficiency, they allow third down conversions 38.8% of the time, that's 20th, and fourth down 46.7% of the time, that's 14th. And in the red zone, they are 20th, allowing 24 touchdowns on 42 trips. Ash, this defense is unique. It's one of the best in the NFL. But it's really good against the pass. And it's really good at going after the quarterback. But it's not great against the run.
Yeah. In particular, it's not good against gap. Gap schemes. So losing the past couple of weeks is an example. Against the Dolphins, they were better because the Dolphins were an outside zone and those kind of things. And that plays into Dallas's hand because their linebackers, we mentioned, no, they don't have that many of them, but they're there because they're good athletic guys. Really, so Clark was an athletic freak coming out of LSU, like 9.8 RAS score. Marquise Bell converted safety, was a big hitter in college. They've moved into linebacker. They're there to read and react to stuff and go for the zones and defend the pass. The Bills, there's a reason they ran the ball so much against them and James Cook, younger brother, Dalvin, who everyone knows from a couple of years ago. There's a reason that he broke out. It's because they can't defend gap runs as well because their linebackers are designed to be light athletic guys against the pass. They don't have the guys to stop gap. So that plays into our hands because we run gap as often as any other team in the league. And we're one of the best gap teams, if not the best one in the league. So running the ball this week might be fun. It might be more of a Monty game. I know last week, obviously, Gibbs had his breakout, though it might be because Monty was in the concussion protocol for a quarter or so with that big hit. Both of them should hopefully have good games with our scheme. It's the pass that worries me because we know what happens when Goff gets pressured and there's good cornerbacks. He gets picked off. It might be one of those games where I don't want to say we need to simplify things for Goff and make it easy, but we don't want him to be having to play hero ball and throw those risky throws. I'm happy taking shots, of course. We need to keep taking shots, especially to JMO, to keep them honest. But I don't want us to put the balls in harm's way just for the sake of it. And another thing that obviously we pointed out early on Discord, one of the reasons to join the Discord is the Cowboys run man more than any other team in the league. And when JMO plays and to be playing against man, we're pretty damn good. I know maybe the PFF grades don't show that, as I put it in there, but that's because we haven't really played against man. There's some variation stuff. But when we get to man, we can complete the ball. Things like Laporta, Reynolds, Leaf, and Amon Ra all against man have at least 70% catch rates. That's when it complains to our hands since they're man heavy because they're defending the pass, putting those one-on-ones against the receivers, putting their cornerbacks in positions to make plays like Bland has, setting an NFL record for amount of pick sixes in a season. And that was halfway through the season. They put their defenders on islands and expect them to make plays. And sometimes they can do it. We have the weapons to maybe make plays against them in return. But as I say, Bland being good as he was, if he has a bounce back game against us, I wouldn't be surprised. Gilmore, yeah, he's getting up there. He's still pretty damn good. Their secondary is just set up to defend a pass. So it's really going to be get ourselves in the one-on-ones and take advantage of them with a can. But when it's there and not there, we can hopefully set ourselves up with a run game. I know people might say, yeah, we still need. I know the past couple of weeks we've been saying we need to pass to set up the run. This week, the run should be there. So use that to set up the pass. Draw their the safeties into the box. Get those one-on-ones for Reynolds and for Amon-Ra and for Jamo, and use them, because that's the best way to keep pace with them, is to take advantages of the mismatches when we can.
Yeah, it's a really interesting defense, and we'll come on to that in just a second, but I've realised that from the top of the show, I neglected to mention someone very special as a supporter of the show, which is Carlton Wood, who donated $12.73, which is £10 converted, for services to broadcasting. Appreciate you, Carlton. Thank you. Thank you very much. And apologies for not mentioning it earlier. I mean, there's such a lot to like about this defense, just aesthetically. When you watch it play, I think there's an element of, I want my team to play like that, because it's intelligent, it's funky, it disguises things really well, it brings a lot of phantom pressures, it creates a lot of stress on your team, you don't know where things are coming from. It blitzes a fair amount, but it actually doesn't need to a huge amount, because of the amount of pressure they get from Lawrence and Parsons on either side, and then Odigzuwa in the interior as well, so obviously having a great year too. So the front four plus Parsons are doing great stuff, and they can just let the back end do their thing. And when you've got Gilmore and Bland back there, as well as Bland had been playing up till 4 weeks ago, you were absolutely fine. Now, of course, 4 weeks ago, and he's like, okay, fine, well, they played the Bills and they played the Dolphins in that stretch. But it's a heck of a time in the season to kind of maybe hit a, let's call it a rookie wall, because I don't think you played a huge amount last year. So let's see what happens with that. But just on a personal level, as much as I hate the Cowboys, I love watching them as a neutral, because it's fun. Both sides of the ball goes for, but defense especially, like, they can just pull a game out of anywhere. They can bring themselves back into it when they're behind. They can shut people down when they're in front. You wish that they were a bit more adaptable to game situations. And actually, I think that they did that against the Dolphins, which is one of the reasons why they stayed in that game. You have a look at the Dolphins, and one of the things about them isn't about Tyreek Hill, and it isn't about Jalen Waddle. It's about what Raheem Mostert and Devon Achane have done this year. They held Miami to 91 yards on the ground on 26 rushes. You have a look at what most an Achane do well, Achane, I should say, sorry, do well. And it's what Jahmyr Gibbs does well. So, you know, if you're looking for potential matchup issues, it's that Dallas, despite being bad against the run, when they felt the need to, manage to change things. However, there's some big things to say about that in terms of how they schematically had to play against the pass, which helped them in the run game. So we said that Dallas played the most man of anyone in the NFL. 40% of their snaps are played in man coverage, which is the most. Almost everyone plays zone the majority. Everyone plays zone the majority of the time. But they love to play man. But against Miami, because you're playing against Hill and Waddle, you can't play man that much. They ended up playing 10% of their snaps in man, as opposed to 40 normally. Because they're playing zone a heck of a lot more, they've got eyes on the quarterback, eyes on the handoff, which means that coming downhill to stop the run is that much easier, because they're not turning away from the ball, having to chase the guy they're covering. So it was playing zone coverage against speedy guys worked for that. Now, it's going to be interesting to see what they do against the Lions. We'll come to matchups a bit in a minute as to which side of their defense will they play, because it kind of feels like a bit of a damned if you do, damned if you don't, from my perspective, and we'll get into more in that in a minute. Any more thoughts on the defense before we get into my observations from the Miami game and then matchups in particular?
Well, just to say that if people are looking for head coaching candidates and coordinators, please pick Dan Quinn over Ben Johnson, pretty please. At least he's got the experience. Ben Johnson's never been a head coach. You don't know what's going to happen. At least Dan Quinn, he's got some experience. He knows what to do in the job. So pick him. Don't pick Ben.
He's been to a Super Bowl.
Exactly.
I know that he fucked it in the Super Bowl. It's one Super Bowl. I mean, Sean McVay also lost in a Super Bowl. You know, like, you got to give someone another shot. Anyway, Dallas-Miami. So it finished 22-20 to Miami. Miami won it with a last-second field goal. I'm not sure that entirely tells the story of what happened there, but On offense, we saw Lamb have a nice carry out of the backfield. I mentioned that they did that quite a lot. In the very first drive, Lutke had two short conversions early out of fullback. One, I think, was out of strong eye, and one was just out of eye formation. So those, I think, were both 3rd and 1 and 3rd and inches, respectively. They then came on to 4th and 1 at the 30, and they decided to go for it instead of kicking the field goal. And they did a play-action pass out of wishbone formation to Ferguson for a big end, or like a kind of variation on the wishbone formation. So they like to sort of show you something and then show you something else, which was interesting. But then on second down and goal from the 1 yard line, Lutke botched the snap with Tua, the handoff with Tua, and it was recovered by Miami. Without that, do they win the game? I actually don't think they do, despite what Dallas want to say, but we'll see. We won't see. But, you know, it's an interesting case to make that maybe changed the game in Miami's favour. Lamb, such a smooth route runner. Really safe hands, great mover with the ball in hand. So from the slot, he catches a slant from the left-hand side going right, makes one guy miss, and he walks in for a 49-yard touchdown. It is sort of kind of reminded me of the pass that the Broncos had in the playoffs to win the game on the first play of the game, when it was the only playoff win for everyone's favorite college quarterback, whose name escapes me.
Tim Tebow.
Thank you.
Literally wearing his jersey for the preview, don't you remember?
I know. Tebow's name, for some reason, even though he's the most famous college player of all time, still somehow escapes me. So his one winning playoff game, he hit that slant going from left to right, and he kind of waltzes in for the touchdown, and he catches it a little bit earlier.
It was Demaryius Thomas, wasn't it?
It was. But the Lamb route kind of reminded me of that play, and Lamb just has the natural ability to make it happen, but he's also kind of elevated himself among the other rookies in that class for me as being wide receiver one. The team, I would say, looks much better in pass than run in this game, but I think that kind of shows out generally. Offensive line struggle with blitz pickup and pressure generally. Miami brought a lot of blitzes, and the hit press got a lot. Two starts inside their own five, they really struggled to get out in the second half. So Miami pinned them deep, and they almost gave up a safety a couple of times, with Dak only just getting some heroics in there to get it out, but they couldn't progress the ball. And Dak, he had a lot of double clutches. It's just a really weird thing, and I hope the Lions don't bite on those, but I don't think these are where he's trying to throw the corner back off. I think it's where he wants to go to his first read. He winds up to throw, and then the coverage is good that he actually has to check himself and then throw something else or throw elsewhere. If it's him reacting to what he sees as opposed to proactively trying to throw people off, I worry about what Dak might do for himself, and I'm happy about what he might do against us, because that kind of shows his hand a little bit about where he wants to go. And if the defense reacts to it well, as opposed to buying fakes or anything like that, you could see Dak throw the ball into dangerous areas. And, you know, sometimes that wasn't great against Miami. On defense, Gilmore in man allows Waddle to just get by him and can't recover for 50 yards. If you want to see what J-Mo should be looking at doing, this was perfect. I mean, just a great route, and Gilmore just lets him run by and can't recover. Why Stephen Gilmore thinks he can keep up with Jalen Waddle, I'm not sure. But then you saw later on in the game them giving like 12 to 15 yard cushions to players. Where have we seen that before, by the way, on third down and 10 teams giving more cushions than they require? Not naming any names, but the Lions absolutely love to do that. Lots of penetration up front on defense. Very aggressive with outside guys. Weird alignments. So don't expect to see four in sort of conventional 3-tech, 7-tech positions. They're going to have some funky stuff where they might line up three guys on one side and one on the other and then stun. There's going to be lots of stuff like that. They're very aggressive coming downhill, especially in swings and screens and toss plays. So if you think, don't worry about it, just throw the wide receiver screen to Khalif Raymond or a running back screen to Jahmyr Gibbs, I'd stop right now and hope that we don't do that, because it's going to go very badly. Traditionally, a man coverage team that played a lot more zone against Miami. I mentioned that earlier. Big stands they had from the five, from the their own five, got to fourth down and lots of chasers pursuing and forcing the turnover. Parsons had a rough call against the end, against, I can't remember who it was against, but at the end of the second quarter, which helped Miami score late. He was angry at the refs. I mean, when calls go against him, he gets himself in trouble because he's too animated. I actually think the Lions could try and push him a little bit, prod the bear, and maybe pick up an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty here or there. I will take fighting dirty against the Cowboys. I just want the win. Stephen Gilmore giving Hill and Waddle too much for cushion. I just mentioned that. And Lawrence was just a terror all day. There was basically no winning against him. So my observations from that game in short. Ash, did you see anything from that game in particular?
Well, not really. I caught bits of it on Red Zone. So I couldn't pull my camera out. But I agree. J-Mo should be turning on the Waddle.
You say obviously about the tackling on the screens. I'm here for us just using that against them. So I know we've shown tendencies in the past couple of weeks to throw those screens even when it's clearly not on. So let's use that as a tendency breaker. Have those kind of screens set up, but then on the backside have Amon-Ra or Reynolds running something else. Goff turns as if he's going to throw the screen, then can quickly turn around and throw it to Amon-Ra on a slant or Reynolds doing a hitch or something. Just use their sort of aggressiveness to get on the screens, swings and stuff against them to get other players open. So that's hopefully something I'm looking for. But as we say, they're a pretty damn good team. Like it's gonna be hard, and we're gonna have to play our best ball to keep up with them. But at the same time, they got as well. They've got to sort out the mistakes they've been making in the past couple of weeks, and they might have to do some of the stuff like playing a bit more zone against us. Focusing on the run because the Bills torched them in a gap scheme, and as you say, they focused a bit more on the run this against Miami, and it kind of works. That might be something they use, they keep doing. But if they play a lot of zone, we've got one of the best receivers in the league against zone with Amon-Ra. I was saying on Discord when we're mentioning the fact that they're the most heavy man team, even against zone, because Amon-Ra, at least it's from what I've seen, he has the freedom with especially those in breaking routes. To choose what depth he's doing it in, so he can find the gaps between the defensive line and the linebackers, and the safeties. I think he's really good at doing against the zone. So if they do play a bit more zone against us, it might be an Amon-Ra day, and then hopefully everyone else can just step up on the outside as well.
Just looking at the box score in this Miami game, I think it tells its own story. Now, when people think about Tua Tagovailoa and they think about Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, they think chunk plays down the field for big touchdowns. And Jalen Waddle had one catch for 50 yards. But Tyreek Hill had 9 for 99. This was a game where Miami played efficiently and short yardage compared to what they're normally used to. The other thing I think is really interesting is the big game that was had by Miami in the tight ends game. Miami don't use tight ends in the passing game. They just don't, because they have an elite running game. They have an elite passing game to their wide receivers. Durham Smythe was 5 of 5 for 56 in this game. Dallas couldn't cover him. It was a real problem for them all game. When they needed 5 to 10 yards, he was the outlet that seemed to always be there because they were worrying so much about Hill and Waddle. I really think this could be an interesting game if we can make the most of Amon-Ra and J-Mo being that attraction, that Sam Laporta could perhaps be the valve that we need to open things up when we need third down conversions. I don't anticipate this being a game where Amon-Ra and J-Mo actually go off. I think that they will be efficient enough, but I don't expect big 100-yard games from them. I think this is Laporta's day. I think that we need to dial into that. Short completions, but not extension of the run play, short completions and swing passes and the like. I think that this needs to be potentially chuck a couple of RPOs in there, because it makes the Dallas team a bit more one-dimensional when it comes to just read the inside linebacker or read the defensive end and just get the ball out quick, but on like a slant to Amon-Ra or Sam Laporta, or hand it off to Gibbs or David Montgomery and have your offensive line doing what they do best, which is getting up the field in run blocking. I think that that simplifies the game against a team which struggles against the run, as well as potentially struggles against tight ends. So we'll see what happens with that. But just generally, a lot of the guys in the chat are saying this, the game script for the Lions, for me, needs to be running the ball. I agree with you. I don't think it's about opening up the run game by passing the ball like we have done the last couple of games. Hammer them. They are not good at defending the run. And despite what they did against Miami in defending the run, they did that successfully because of what they had to do to defend Hill and Waddle. Do they do that for Amon-Ra and J-Mo? I don't know. Maybe they stick with that scheme this week, in which case, interesting, we'll kill you, Sam LaPorta. If they go back to type, thinking, well, the Lions just aren't that good, so we'll be who we are, which I wouldn't blame them for thinking that way, but overlook us at your peril, because I think that Monty and Gibbs could absolutely kill them on the ground, especially with how well our starting five offensive linemen have been, and they're all going to be a go this week. So let's hammer them. I mean, I want 200 yards on the ground. I would love to see that.
I agree. And I know I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and it's looking more likely. I think this could be the game where both Monty and Gibbs reach that 1,000-yard mark. They'll be the first 1,000, double 1,000-yard rushes we've had in our history, because Eric was saying about the breakdown. We have to know about, it was actually Joe responding to Eric's stat about it. We haven't had that many 1,000-yard rushes in our history outside of, like, Barry, obviously. We've had, like, people like Kevin Jones and that. To have two of them a couple of years, I remember in the first year of Patricia, we had that massive celebration when Kerryon Johnson, I think, got to 1,000 yards. It was the first time since, like, 2012 at best. To go from that to having two 1,000-yard rushes in 5 years, that's going to be mad. It'll just be the ultimate, like, stick your middle finger up at all those fancy gurus. We get to pull all those receipts out again and go up them. It's going to be fun to watch that run game, as you say, because our starting five, they're probably back healthy. I know Decker missed a couple of games, missed the practices with basically what turns out to be veteran vets by the looks of things. I'm hoping for us to, at least in the run game, yeah, just mold them. It's, as we'll come on to in a minute, it's the pass get, it's the pass defense and the pass rush that worries me for the offensive line, maybe.
Was it Javid Best or was it Reginald Bush?
It might be Reggie Bush. I think it was Reggie Bush.
I fancy it being Reggie Bush. Someone said it in the chat as well, but that resonated more with me, even though Bush wasn't that good for us, really. He had one season. But Best was definitely the talented back, but obviously his injury really put pay to his career in general. Yeah, so just finishing off in terms of the Lions' offense, they're going to be aggressive, especially in that front four. I back our offensive line to have the better of the Dallas pass rush most of the time. And Parsons will get his. I fully anticipate a sack from him in this game. I fully anticipate a sack from DeMarcus Lawrence. I fully anticipate a sack from Odigzua. It would not surprise me if they had 3 or 4, 5 sacks in this game. But I think outside of those sacks, I think he'll be kept relatively clean. I know that's a weird distinction, but I don't expect him to be pressured massively. I just expect the pressures to turn into sacks.
Yeah.
When he's kept clean, I want them to go after the DBs. I think that Gilmore in man coverage is going to struggle against our receivers. I just don't back him against either LaPorta or against the outside wide receivers and in Amon-Ra, or if he plays outside, obviously plays mostly in the slot, or Reynolds or J-Mo or Leaf or whatever. I like that matchup. And against Bland, gives him another opportunity to make a pick, sure. But do you think teams didn't learn not to throw at him, to give him pick slip opportunities? Or did they see someone who is okay in coverage and has good ball production, but actually not unlike a certain guy on IR?
I was going to go for someone else in the safety room. Kirby. Okay. He is very much Kirby in the corner, but so is Trayvon Diggs. They're both the same kind of thing where you have to live with them giving up big plays, as Bland has the couple of weeks, because they also get those game-changing plays. So remember, Trayvon Diggs, the year that he led the league in interceptions, he also led the league in the amount of yards given up in coverage. for some reason, the Cowboys, especially under this Dan Quinn scheme, love to have their cornerback one be a guy that gets burned, also makes those game-changing plays, can give up 120 yards in coverage in the game, but also can get two picks. I would be going after Bland, especially with Reynolds, because if I remember rightly, Bland's like 5'11". Reynolds, as a physical receiver, will have the contested catches opportunities against him. Might be able to bully him physically. So again, we can pick on Bland, hopefully.
Yeah, I really think we can. And, you know, the safety room, I really like Hooker and I always have. But the guy with the worst PFF grade in that team in terms of being a starter is Jayron Kearse, who we know well. So
very well, yes.
So we can definitely go after these DBs if the O-line can hold up for the majority of the game against that D-line. Don't expect it all game. I think it's going to have a big, big impact on what the Lions can do in the past. Flipping over to the other side of the ball, trying to hang with this offense is going to be tough. However, Lions, you're talking about one of the premier run defense teams in the league. And while we talk about this Dallas team in terms of what it can do in the past, with the run, it's not something they just abandon. They keep at it, they keep going, and they do feed Pollard. I mean, he's had 219 rushes so far this year. That ain't nothing. He's getting close to a 1,000-yard season. He probably will make it based on his average at the moment. He needs 114 yards in the final two games. So you're talking about a reasonable guy at 4 yards a carry, but he's getting there through volume. The Lions should do a number on Pollard, frankly, but they're going to keep feeding him the ball. Well, if you do that at 4 yards a click, you're going to find yourself in 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4. Can the Lions execute on 3rd down? Can they get some stops? We're going to have the opportunities to do so. I mean, we struggled in 3rd and 21 and 3rd and 26 last week. And they've got CeeDee Lamb, who is basically playing as well, if not better, than Justin Jefferson this year, who really hasn't been fit. But yeah, Lamb is one of the top two wide receivers in the NFL this season, realistically, with Hill probably being one. I really think he's up there. So it's going to be tough. Double him, triple him if you have to, give everyone else one-on-one, take your chances. But I believe in this team to make those conversions. And you know, if you can do even better, because that O-line has been struggling, if you can be exotic, if you can bring some run blitzes and actually get Pollard getting hit behind the line, if you can give Dak some problems and force him to throw a little bit too quickly, the Lions have been great at getting some arms out and batting some balls in the air. That's going to help in this game in particular, because a lot of the stuff is going to come over the middle. Lamb has done a lot of damage in the slot over the middle. So has Jake Ferguson, obviously, as a tight end. So if you can flood the passing lanes with defensive linemen getting their arms up, it's going to be a big deal. And that's drilled into these lines really, really well. So I think this is potentially, despite how good they are in the past, a reasonable matchup for the Lions. What do you make of it, Ash?
Yeah, and you basically, you put one of my points I was going to make a lot more eloquently than I can. I was going to say, I would rather us be in those third and shorts than the third and longs, because for some reason we do a lot better at stopping them than we do the third and longs. You saw it last week. It's been a symptom of this team for a while now that on third and 15s and stuff, it seems the coverage switches off and they're able to convert. Though, considering the last drive of the Vikings last week, they do get some helpful spots on certain conversions, like when a certain star receiver is about half a yard short and a key third down and the Vikings spike the ball. So it should have ended the game there, but no, they mark Jefferson as if he got the first down. But yeah, because we're such a good run-stopping team, if we can get them into those third and shorts, we should be able to stop them. It's those sort of longer ones where you might get them, it's like 2nd and 12, 2nd and 15, like a tackle for us. Those are the ones that are worrying. And then, yeah, we'll have to focus on Lamb. I have faith with, especially with Anzalone now, another week back being healthy and the safety room stepping up over the past couple of weeks. I have faith in us being able to handle Jake Ferguson, which is, it's a nice surprise because obviously we have that historic weaknesses against tight ends. Kind of, I don't want to obviously say it kind of worked yet last week because Hockenson was getting his until the unfortunate injury and fuck the Viking fans saying they want to kill Kirby Joseph for what was an actual good tackle. It was just, he went the right place, because would you rather him gone high and gone helmet to helmet with Hockenson? No, that's how they taught to tackle. After he went out, we kind of did okay against tight ends. Our cafe against Hogs, it is going to be Lamb. It's going to be the Lamb show. And it might be, yeah, he might get 9 catches for 140 yards. But if we can limit him like to one touchdown and kind of limit Cooks and everyone else to reasonable yardage, we should have a chance. It's just stopping those big plays turning into big plays for touchdowns. We can give up the explosive. I think we gave up 10 plus explosive pass plays last week. Did it really help the Vikings? Some ways, yes, but at the same time, quite a lot of those as well were ones where there was just a momentary little lapse in concentration from someone, like the KJ Osborne ones across the middle where someone just misses one tackle and they're going for 20 yards. Those are things that we can clean up, hopefully, over the next, even if it's a short week, just focus on that. Focus on keeping the plays in front of you and making the tackles, because if we can tackle Brandon Cooks on a sort of on the play and stop him sort of getting a few yards after catch, if we can stop Michael Gallup on a hitch route on a 3rd and 8, if we can stop him short of the sticks, those might be the key ones where we limit them on the third downs, get them to punt the ball to us. Yes, they have one of the best punters in the league. There's a reason there. Our special teams is the 4th and DVOA was the 22nd. Just limit to that, because I have faith in the offense. We saw it last week where we can make those 12-play 75-yard drives where we need to score. We can do that. It's just limiting the amount of chances that the Cowboys have to score.
Yeah, that is what it is all about. Just wanted to mention this because obviously it's a big talking point. Dallas are unbeaten at home this season with a 7-0 record. The Lions, however, are 6-2 away from home. So they are no strangers to going into other people's parks and knocking them out of it, to be quite frank. Now, obviously, they had the absolute shocker against Baltimore in Baltimore. But besides that, the Lions have been more than competitive, including just last week against a fairly hostile Vikings crowd. I mean, it was loud in there and there weren't many Lions fans, and the Lions ended up getting it done against Dallas. I anticipate the Lions traveling crowd being really strong. I don't think that Dallas are necessarily going to lock out that stadium for Lions fans. So I think there's going to be a strong bit of support from the Lions faithful that seem to travel as well as any team in the league, if not the best in the NFL. And that seems to carry us to something, Ash. I don't know whether it makes any difference at all, but Lions fans have been getting it done away from home.
Well, I think it does. And again, to bring English football into it, it's the energy of the crowd. You can see over here where teams are flagging in like the 75th minute away. They're like 2-1 down and they need a bit of energy. The crowd gives it them. And that's what our crowd does as well. We make noise when the opposing teams are on offense because of the traveling fans. We make it hard for them. Yeah, last week we didn't get the lockout because the Vikings were having their whiteout game that they copied from Penn State. Great idea, by the way. I love the aesthetic of it. But you copied Penn State, let's be real here. And it didn't matter. With the traveling fans this week, I know it's Jerry World and it's kind of a big stadium and it's kind of built for the Dallas fans because they have the majority to be loud. But we can use that against them, as I said, on the key third down, our fans can get loud and we can make it happen. Like I remember saying to my brothers when I was watching the game, when we were starting to win, I could hear the Let's Go Lions chants. That was with a minimal amount of fans and you could hear us on the coverage. So what's it going to be like this week where we might have 5,000, 10,000 fans there? We can absolutely get loud and give, let's say, I don't know, Kendall Vildor that little bit of energy he might need to cover Michael Gallup or Axe Antelope. Well, if he's coming on a blitz on like a 3rd and 12, because that's going to be something fun to watch. Because as we said, Terrence Hill gives up a lot of pressures. If he's focused on Hutch, why not let's send Ify kind of around the corner or through that sort of that gap? Use that kind of thing. We've suddenly introduced this whole blitzing element with Ify. We've had it with Anzalone this year. Might be something we can pull out where we can use the loud noise to sort of distract them and the huddle on third down. And yeah, then suddenly send a blitzer out of nowhere that they didn't really pick up because they were too focused on the crowd noise. It might not have a big effect on the game, but it might be just enough to sort of switch it from being like a 55% Dallas win percentage just suddenly being a bit closer makes it that much easier for us to maybe pull out a result.
All right, let's talk about some kind of key matchup thoughts. So we've talked at length about all of this. We've talked about Dallas in detail. We've talked generally about how we want things to work here. But when it comes to condensing it to just a few points in terms of the Lions' keys to victory, what do you want to see the Lions do? Some quick fire points, maybe something you haven't mentioned before. I don't know, but whatever you want to bring up here.
Get pressure on Dak, not only through Hutch, but from other players, as I mentioned earlier. Don't let Pollard have a breakout game against us in the run. And get some explosive plays, because that's the way you beat them. Just get as many punches in as you can, so let's hit some explosive plays, which we have been doing the past couple of weeks.
For me, this game comes down to two players, and they're both on the Lions side on defense. One is Ifeatu Melifonwu. He's been absolutely fantastic in recent weeks. Him coming on those blitzes, him getting those picks are going to be interesting. But actually, I expect the Lions to say to him, go get CD Lamb. I think that's going to be the matchup that they really key in on. Because when Melifonwu is given one task, he executes it really well. When he has to do multiple things, it's tough. So go on a blitz, or cover the deep middle, or go and get this guy in man. Well, go and mark CD Lamb for the majority of the game. Just take him out. Because I think that's a matchup that Melifonwu can... I'm not going to say win, but I'm going to say compete. And that's what we need on that side. And the other guy is Brian Branch. Tackles for loss, nickel blitzes, all of that sort of stuff, which is going to keep Dak not quite with 2 feet on the ground all of the time. Those two guys, slot hybrid types that they both are, they need to have good games. And the Lions are going to win this one. Because I got no fear elsewhere. Lions are going to be productive on the ground in the run. Hutch is going to get his pressures. If those two guys perform on defense, Lions win this game. And that's as simple as I can make it. Score prediction.
Trying to do the math in my head now. Do I do it? 31-28 to the Lions.
How do you think that happens? Is that a big comeback victory? The Lions stay ahead and Dallas come back into it? What's your script?
Punch per punch. We get a sort of 2-minute drive to, at the end of the game. Let's say we've got 1 minute 45 left on the clock. We need to go from our 27, and it is 28-28. And we've like one big play to JMO at some point in that drive. We get into field goal range. We just run the ball to center it for a field goal. And we do something that we haven't done for a while in my memory. We kick a field goal to win. I can see that happening, where it's just been one of those boxing matches where it's just, they punch us, we punch back, so on and so forth, and we just get that last lick in, that last little right hook that sort of lands the knockout blow at the end of the game.
I was looking back at what I predicted for this game in pre-season just to see if my feelings remain the same. Yeah. Unfortunately, they don't. I was the only one who picked a win against Minnesota in Minnesota last week. Everyone else picked a loss. This week, everyone has gone for a loss in pre-season. I went for a loss by 10. But my feelings on it have just changed so radically. And it's because they have been bad against good teams. I'm putting it on the line by saying the Lions are a good team. And so I think Dallas are going to struggle. I'm going for the Lions in a shootout by multiple scores. I'm going to go 45-33. I think it's going to be a game where actually there's not much stopping people, but when it does come to stopping people, the Lions just get one or two more stops than Dallas do, and that's it. I do not think this is going to be a game with a huge amount of defense. I don't think they can stop us on offense. And I think Lamb will get some, and I think Ferguson will get some, but I think we'll get one here or there.
I can see it. I can see it.
All right. We have a question to get to from Mike, but we're going to address that in the post show. And if you guys in the live chat have any questions you want us to address, don't forget to at the channel and get your question in, and we'll talk about that in just a sec. For you guys on the audio pod, you know what to do if you want to see what that extra time brings. However, our next episode is going to be the college podcast, which hopefully is going to be coming in the next day or two. Otherwise, Ash, you free on Saturday night?
Yep, it's going to be a fun one. I'm going to be coming right off the Orange Bowl. So I might be already in a good or bad mood, depending on how that goes.
Well, please don't be in a bad mood when you lose, because you can't expect to win that game with the number of people you've got who've elected to go to the draft.
I mean, yeah, it's something like 40 players combined from both teams have opted out of this bowl game. I guess that's what happens when you get screwed over by the college football committee and you have nothing to really play for. People to pick draft spot. Oh, yeah, I'm predicting a loss, but if we can make it respectable and stick a middle finger up to some of the pundits, cough, 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 then I'll be happy enough.
Yeah, so Saturday night, we will be live, myself and Ash, following and live reacting to that game. So please come and join us on this channel. We will be live at 1 a.m. UK time. That is 8 p.m. Eastern. Come and join us then. It'll be fun, win or lose, I'm sure. Maybe not if we lose, but never mind. The review show will likely be Monday afternoon at our usual time of 2:30 Eastern, 7:30 p.m. UK time. You can follow us on our socials on Rural Alliance UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And the group on Facebook for worldwide fans is Detroit Lions Fans UK, One Pride Worldwide. The website is rotluk.com. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us 5 stars on your podcast provider. Any help you can give is much, much appreciated. Ash, thanks for doing this with me, buddy. I can't get my words out to end this show, so let's get out of here. We're still gunning for the one seed. In Dan we trust. Let's go, Lions, One Pride.
One Pride.